As human beings, we all face times of suffering. A long time ago, a poor young woman named Kisa married into a very rich merchant family. She had a son, and that raised not only her own personal joy, but her status in the family, in the community. But then a terrible thing happened. Her infant son became ill and died. Kisa was struck with horrific grief. Weeping and groaning, she took her dead baby from house to house, asking for a cure, begging for someone to help her. And of course, no one in the town could do anything. One person took pity on her and told her to go to the Buddha. When she carried the child to the Buddha and told him her sad story, he listened with compassion and then said, "I would love to help you, but there's only one way for me to help you with your problem. Gather a mustard seed from each family in the village whose home has not known death and bring them to me. Then I will be able to help you." Kisa was filled with hope, and she went from door to door, and every door she knocked on, the answer was, "I'm sorry, we can't give you a mustard seed, for our family has known death at some time." In the evening, Kisa quietly took her baby and sat for a long time. Then she was able to say goodbye. She returned to the Buddha with a peaceful heart and became one of his followers. We have all faced time of intense suffering. When others are suffering, we can feel at a loss about what to do or say for them or with them. Sometimes we'll withdraw or immediately start talking from our own experience or avoid the person or situation due to our own discomfort. You can offer a very wonderful gift this holiday season. It's a powerful gift. It doesn't cost a cent, and it's one size fits all. This is the gift of compassionate listening. During the summer of 2014, I had some very intense firsthand experiences of both pain and suffering by being on both sides of the hospital bed. I felt called for some time to the work of being a chaplain. And a chaplain is someone who ministers to ill or dying or people and their families who are in a time of crisis. Like learning how to swim, reading all the books in the world will not get you that experience. So you have to immerse yourself in a program that will get you there. I served for 40 hours per week at a very large hospital in Orange County. For 30 of those hours, I visited patients, their families, and I shadowed chaplains in the 24-hour trauma center. For the first time in my life, I saw people die. Along with clinical hours with patients, the chaplain interns also had 10 hours of class per week. And that was where we would go and probe the darker corners of our own psyches and emotions that might interfere with the work of being a chaplain, of being a deep listener. There were many lessons to learn outside of the visits. We continually reflected on our experience with patients and their families, with each other, and with our deeper selves. As we finished out this very, very intense work, I was diagnosed with an aggressive form of breast cancer. In a surprise reversal, I became the patient in the dialogue between patient and chaplain, the work I'd been so strongly called to do. Listening with compassion, with mindfulness, just sitting with human pain and suffering, was very dramatically the framework for all my experience over those months. I listened to patients with all my attention and heart and truly reflected on what they had to say about life, illness, and death. I learned to deeply respond to them rather than to simply react. Jack Kornfield, a psychotherapist as well as a well-known Buddhist teacher, has to say this about compassionate listening and response. Instead of inflaming a bad situation, we can always seek ways of touching the good in another. Without denying pain and injustice, we can also look for the secret beauty of others. Our spiritual practice can be this simple: to see with the eyes of compassion and act with our wisest intention. Do not doubt the transformation that can be born out of such conscious attention. It is from our intentions that our life grows. It is an opening to one another that our own path is made whole. I finished out the chaplain intern program at the same time I prepared for cancer treatments. After the preliminary appointments, my doctor started me off with 2 chemotherapy drugs that were infused into a port in my chest. And you can see as I'm talking, I'm kind of like touching my little scar where my port was. Every 2 weeks for 2 months for 4 treatments total. Although I was a deer in the headlights from the diagnosis and the whirlwind of starting up the treatments, I just put one foot in front of the other. I had many people to help me through this tough and uncertain journey. Other people I met in the waiting rooms as a patient were not so lucky. And access to healthcare is a huge social justice issue that probably deserves many, many sermons. I chose to undergo treatments at the same hospital where I had just interned, so I even had chaplain friends close by. It took 6 months to complete all the treatments. When I went back to work, it was like coming out of a dark cave after all those months of chemotherapy and radiation, bald and blinking, walking back into the bright light of life. I learned so much from these experiences, and I'm still processing all of it. I'll probably reflect on that time for the rest of my life. I learned some incredibly important lessons for interacting with ill and dying people. All of us who've suffered health issues and in other ways have learned many things we can share with each other. One of the greatest gifts that we can share with each other as a friend or a family member is to simply ask how someone is doing when they are struggling. Listen without trying to fix or give any advice. Love them and respect their boundaries. I learned that our lives undergo huge changes with a serious illness, even with a strong recovery. I personally have let go of many things, and things change. My life has taken on a very different contour now. One example, I stepped up my plan to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. I have some things I want to accomplish, and now is the time. Listening to those we love who are in crisis sounds easy, but it can be super, super hard. Most of us are very pragmatic people. I know I love to fix things, whether they are physical, concrete, emotional, or psychological. Just try and stop me. So what did I use as points of reference to quiet myself and allow myself to be fully present with the patients I was visiting? Because I am a talker. It's a hard to, you know, kind of pull back. What emerged for me was a much deeper understanding of our Unitarian Universalist first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and a reconnection with my Buddhist roots. I needed to tap back into that deeply centered place. While it can sound a bit romantic for one to go into a modern hospital and minister to the spiritually to the ill and the dying, the nitty-gritty reality can come at you very differently. I would love to say I was a combination of Florence Nightingale, Mother Teresa, and the Buddha for those first visits, but I was very nervous and kind of scared around the patients. And why would someone feel nervous? I hadn't been around a lot of hospital patients in my life, and it takes some getting used to. I worked on staying focused to be with each person in sacred space. Sometimes just sitting in silence was okay if the person couldn't relate verbally. Some of the situations were heartbreaking, some were wonderful, and some were unnerving. Some were very ironic. One of my patients was very ill, and the nurses asked me to work with the family. The patient's Christian parents were convinced that if their son-in-law would come to God, God might listen to their prayers for their daughter and hope. It's a type of divine bargaining that people do. I've done it, you know. And other families, too, in the hospital would do that. This time was unique, though, since the son-in-law was a lapsed Unitarian Universalist. I couldn't believe that I was being asked to convert someone from my own religion over to another faith. I did work out what I thought was a compassionate way to minister to the parents, the patient, and help the husband too, without having to compromise my own beliefs and convert someone away from my own faith. That was a real surprise, and one I still haven't gotten over. I still think about that and kind of smile and ruminate. Three of the most interesting people I spoke with were older gentlemen who did not seem like the reflective or soul-searching types. They had been diagnosed with diseases or had ailments that were terminal, and they'd been told to get their affairs in order, which is, you know, pretty kind of tough. Then they were unexpectedly cured by the surgeries and the treatments, and they got their lives back. They were thinking about their lives and their past in a whole new way. They had a second chance at life. I love talking to them, hearing them reflect on their motives, actions, and their lives, possibly for the first time with depth and meaning. I felt truly blessed to be part of those conversations. Many patients would shoo away the chaplain, and I didn't blame them. We are often the uninvited guests in someone's room. Many people don't want to talk or just want to say hi or whatever. But if someone wants to and needs to talk to someone, that's when the magic happens. I had some of the most meaningful conversations I've ever had with another human being as a chaplain intern. What creates that magic? Giving that gift of focused, non-judgmental listening, not fixing, not comparing, and not having to tell your own story. Just holding that person quietly in a universal love for the time that you are together. Just listening, providing the gift of being truly heard and understood by another person. So on that hot August day when I walked over from the hospital at lunchtime to find out my test results at my own internist office and received the news that I had cancer and it had spread to two of my lymph nodes, I came apart. Where did I go in those first minutes? I went back to class, to the love and caring and support of my chaplain friends. They loved me, hugged me, and got me through those first awful days. They listened and they understood. We can all serve as caring listeners. The basic techniques aren't complicated, even if they can be difficult for some of us to remember, and I am at the top of that list. I am included, definitely. Having been through a medical crisis from both sides, I can speak to that feeling of, what do I say? You know, someone comes up and, you know, they've had a tough diagnosis or a bad time. So you want to help, you care, you're a good person, and you're living out our 7 UU principles. Newly diagnosed people are often inundated with good advice and good intentions. Keeping it simple is best. Questions like, how is it going today or right now? And then truly listening to the person is one of the best ways to care. Offering but not forcing help will be greatly appreciated. I put together 3 positive suggestions to help when we don't know what to say to a friend or a loved one when they are going through any type of crisis. First, allow them to have the emotions they are having. They will need to feel sad, get angry, and grieve at times. Don't try and talk them out of what they are feeling because you are uncomfortable. Asking and listening without fixing is the best gift you can give someone. And my personal pet peeve was people telling me to stay positive. If one more person told me to stay positive, I felt like I couldn't be responsible for my actions any longer. Try not to minimize their situation. Think twice before launching into "it could be a lot worse" phrases. I really tried not to be whiny, so if I told someone how I felt, it was pretty straight up. It was, you know, just me being matter of fact. And again, respect your loved one's boundaries around what they are willing to talk about. Let them know that you love them and will be there for them. But Don't be offended if you hear a no, not right now, to your offers. Your offer will be appreciated, but the person might not need that kind of help, not know what they need yet, or have things covered already. And thirdly, check in with the person now and then and send a card. If you don't hear back right away, again, don't be offended. They might not have the strength to be around other people or deal with the outside world right at that time. Let them know they are in your thoughts and prayers. Know that your caring is very much appreciated and helps the person feel connected to their larger community. To those who are traveling the path of sadness or grief or illness today, my heart goes out to you. Know that there are those of us who will listen and will love you. Forgive mistakes of those who might say the wrong thing. And if you are comfortable, let us or someone you are close to know what you need to feel cared for during this time. Many of us are deeply hurting after the last election. If you are in a centered place, listen to the cares and concerns of another person. Deep and compassionate listening doesn't mean that you can't respond to another, but let them come up with a solution for themselves. We all carry the seeds to the solutions to our own problems within us. It can be freeing to try new things, so I will challenge us to an experiment during this 2016 holiday season. We can reach out to and truly listen to the people around us. If you are willing and able to practice some deep listening, keep to our first principle. Remember the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Then offer up the gift of mindful listening with all your heart and see what magic happens. Amen. Shalom, salam, namaste, and blessed be.